Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. Our guest is WTA Tour CEO Steve Simon. Steve took over the position 3 years ago and is still going strong. He was heavily involved in the Indian Wells event and as a member of the WTA board, moved over to the CEO position in 2015. We talk about where women's tennis is right now, this new deal with Tennis Channel that the WTA Tour signed. Serena Williams, his thoughts a month later on the U.S. Open final. A good wide-ranging discussion about the business of women's tennis with the guy at the top of the org chart. Here he is, Steve Simon. I was thinking this makes 3 years on the job for you. Went fast.
Yeah, it does. You're right. It has gone fast. It's been a quick period of time.
Give us your state of the union. What's sort of top line? Where do you see the women's game right now? What do you like? What are the challenges? What's the top line when you talk to the board right now?
Well, I think that from my perspective, and with the tenure that I've been here, I've never been more excited or higher about where we're at right now. We're from a product standpoint, I think the quality of our product going out is at all-time highs with respect to the quality of play as well as the depth of play and the variety of personalities and product that is available each and every week. I think that from a business perspective, business is continuing to trend very positively as our audience numbers are continuing to grow. We are attracting a lot of interest from the business segments of the world and sponsorship and other things. So things are, I think, are trending in a very positive direction right now.
It used to be very easy in sports to assess health, right? You'd use ratings and revenue, but that's gotten trickier, especially for a global brand like yours. Sure. What are the metrics you use? I mean, when you talk about the health of the sport, what are you looking at in particular?
Yeah, I think it's very fair, and obviously those metrics are changing now. Obviously, with the world of social media and the digital platforms that are out there. But we're certainly looking to see growth across all of these platforms. We're certainly seeing a change in our demographics of our audience, which is clearly being driven through the social platforms, which trend a little bit younger than the traditional linear broadcast deals. I think we begin looking at what I'll call the stickiness, and how long people are staying with our content versus just clicking through it. And we're seeing growth there. And then, of course, like any business, we're seeing growth in revenues, which is very important because that obviously allows us to keep investing back into new initiatives and future investment into our sport that we hope will continue to grow it.
I'm reading between the lines and I'm hearing that our former colleague Courtney Wynn deserves a raise. I wrote last week that the vital center of the WTA seems to be moving to Asia. Defend, attack, modify. You agree with that? That's sort of the nerve center of women's tennis seems to be moving to the Far East. You agree?
No, I think that the Far East has become a very solid part of our business. There's obviously a lot of business that's come there, and we've had a lot of success in that region of the world. I still believe Europe plays a very, very strong role as the majority of our athletes are European-based. And I think tennis in Europe is still the stronghold. But I think what's also coming on here is with some of the new young American players, we're gaining strength back here in the U.S. market because for any global brand, without the U.S. market, I think you're gonna struggle. So I think for us, the beauty of it is that we do have a stronghold in Asia, but I think it's complementing what has been established in the foundation of Europe and obviously the resurgence from the U.S.
You mentioned the U.S. and the importance of having a beachhead here. The big news recently was that the WTA was moving back to Tennis Channel, and I know it made a lot of American fans happy. It certainly made Tennis Channel happy. I mean, take this where you want. I don't think we need to or want to disparage anyone, but why this move? How are you feeling about it?
Well, we're excited about it, and obviously we just recently announced that we will our international rights, which are all the international events, will now be moving from BN to back to Tennis Channel. This will be in addition to the current U.S. events that currently have agreements through their domestic rights with Tennis Channel. So we think that's exciting and will be a great opportunity. BN is one of the largest rights holders for the WTA on a worldwide basis. They're a terrific partner. And I think the reflection of this change, a lot of the credit should go to BN. And I say that because as a good partner, when we embarked on our new expanded all-court coverage, which came into place in January of 2017, we began experiencing scheduling challenges with BN in the later part of the week because they being a multi-sport platform, it obviously began to conflict with a lot of their team offerings, significant obviously in the soccer world or football world. They, as good partners, clearly saw the issues associated with this, and we worked together and came to an agreement to release these rights as of January 2019, and we went through a bid process and ended up with Tennis Channel, which we're very excited about. BN will continue to carry highlights packages and obviously the magazine show and possibly some other programming. But I think it was about everybody wanting to do what was right for the sport, and we're very excited about the opportunity. And we know the U.S., from the feedback we've had, obviously the U.S. fans are very excited about this as well.
And I would add Tennis Channel is excited too. I was interesting. You mentioned demographics and the shifts there in a younger audience. What else are you seeing in terms of demographics in the data?
Well, what we're seeing is obviously with the growth of the social platforms and the viewership of content on these platforms, we are seeing that our audience is definitely, or we're gaining audience, is definitely trending at a much younger age. The linear audience has a traditional area for us, you know, anywhere from the 45 to 65 range, which is traditional with most demographics in that medium. And then when you get to the social platforms, you see the demographics from 18 to 29. I think this is very important for us because obviously this is where we're cultivating our future fan and also beginning to cultivate how we address these platforms and put our content out there in manners in which this consumer is going to consume it and in the formats they're going to consume it in going forward. So we're seeing, which is good, that a younger audience is beginning to follow our sport, and now we need to build upon it.
Serena Williams shut things down after the U.S. Open, which isn't a big surprise, and she's done in the past. But Halep is injured, Madison Keys injured, Sloane Stephens more or less shutting it down. Ostapenko complained she's exhausted. The results come across my screen, and there's always an RET with an injury. What are we going to do about the physical and mental demands that the calendars play? And this isn't unique to women's tennis, obviously, but what are we going to do about this calendar here?
Well, I think that it's not anything new. It is a long calendar for sure. And I don't know too many sports where you don't begin to see that in any sport as you get towards the end of the season. In fact, we probably last a little bit longer than that physical sport that we follow here called football. But there's no question it's a long year. I think the exciting thing for us is that with the depth of our product, we've got a very exciting end of the year coming, leading into our finals, where we still have, with 2 weeks to go, three spots available and five players fighting for it, which are all exciting stories in themselves. And I think that one thing that we as a sport, and I've been on record saying about this, we need to do is we need to look at our format long term. We need to protect the integrity of competition. But I do think that asking these athletes over a 44-week period of time to be playing three-hour matches day in and day out with no rest in between is going to take a toll on their bodies.
You mean match format you're talking?
Pardon me?
You're talking match format. You're talking the format
exactly.
of the competition itself.
Exactly.
How far are you willing to go there?
Well, I think that there are ways that what we have to focus on is how do we get our matches where they become 90-minute to two-hour matches versus these 3 hours, because I think, one, it will work better for our broadcast windows, but also, more importantly, as physical as the tennis is today and as athletic and powerful as it's become, if we can get our athletes off of the court in a shorter period of time, I believe they will stay healthier, and they actually may play more, which is great, because the more that they're on the court, obviously the better the ratings and the better the product is for our fans.
Four game sets. I mean, how, you know, when you think about what this looks like, what do you envision?
Well, I think you could look at, you know, there's been the tests of the Fast Four format, which is mm-hmm. the four game format that you've reflected. In the doubles, we already have a format where you play a tiebreaker for the third set, and I believe that format was used for the recently held Labor Cup event, which is a pretty high level. So, I mean, we have that as well. You know, do you go to no ad scoring? Do you play tiebreakers at five all or in six, you know, versus six all? I think there's a number of things that you can look at to do it. But I think we as a sport, as all sports, have to look at the duration of our matches, because I do think that the consumption capacity or rate of our fans is going to continue to diminish. They don't sit in one place for 3 hours anymore. They like it in smaller nuggets, and I think we have to react to that as well as deal with the health of our athletes.
I was thinking today's October 9th, and if my math is right, the U.S. Open Women's Final was September 9th, a month later, now that passions are cooled. What lessons did you learn? I mean, what's our takeaway from that women's final now that we're in a bit of a detached space?
Well, I mean, look, what happened a month ago, you know, was unfortunate, I think, on many, many fronts. It should have been a celebration of a new and exciting champion in Naomi, and I think that got completely overshadowed. I think that anytime you have those situations, I do believe that you need to take those, look at them hard, and turn them into positives. And I think that there's two things that we have to work on from there. The first is getting our sport to look at how we deal with coaching. From a WTA perspective, I think I've been consistent in that I believe that coaching is part of our sport and should be part of the match and the story. So, you know, we're going to continue to support that background and work with the sport, which is the sport is willing to work together on this and have a conversation, which I think is positive. And then two, you know, I think that the most polarizing issue that came from it was the argument that, are men and women treated the same by officials? And, I think this is a very, very polarizing discussion. And I think, again, we as a sport have to work on the fact that this never happens again, and that we work with our officials to ensure that hopefully, again, this question is never asked, and that we have a consistency in how we deal with these things, because it was the question that came from it. No matter what your position is on it, it was the reality of the question, and we as a sport have to make sure that question doesn't come up again.
Part of your job is to popularize a product. If I gave you truth serum here, is there any sort of paradoxical sense that some good came of this, in the sense that this overshadowed football for that weekend? That Saturday Night Live is still referencing what happened in the U.S. Open final that perhaps they wouldn't have if this match doesn't have controversy. When Serena plays in Australia, this is still going to be a resonant story. Is there any sense that, unfortunate as the circumstances may have been, some good has come of this, in the sense that boy, tennis sure enjoyed a period of relevance here?
Well, it certainly enjoyed a sense of relevance. Obviously, it was a very highly, even before the incident happened, the ratings on it was extremely high. In fact, I believe it was the highest rated one of the tournament. Just like the match, I think, in Wimbledon was also the highest rated for Wimbledon as well. So the profile is certainly growing. It shows the strength of, obviously, Serena Williams and what she means to our sport and our tour. But obviously, anytime you get stories like that, it certainly raises the profile as well, because of the debate and everything that surrounds it. We're not looking for this. There are other stories we would much prefer to have and be talking about. And hopefully that's where we evolve from this.
You mentioned Laver Cup. Were you in Chicago?
I was not in Chicago, no.
But it seems like a real story in the tennis ether this fall has been these global competitions. And, who knows if tennis has the capacity for three of them, which are now on the table. But regardless, is this something the WTA is looking at? I mean, you've been a bit on the sidelines, which might not be a bad thing. But is there any reason why these would not work for women's tennis as well?
Well, no, I think that fans love team competitions. I think that there's, I mean, look at the Ryder Cup, look at the Laver Cup, look at the excitement that comes around, Davis Cup ties and Fed Cup ties in certain countries and everything. You can see the passion, you can see the patriotism, and the players enjoy it as well. We would love to, we have been on the sidelines, but we would love to have a team competition on the women's side as well. The challenge with it is, and one of the reasons we've been looking at it a little bit differently, is, as you reflected earlier, we have an extremely full calendar. And we have to, I don't want to shove an event within the calendar that has a detrimental effect on the other sanctions and members and events that we currently have. So we're certainly open to looking at these. There are options that have been put in front of us that we will continue to look at. But I want to make sure that it is integrated within the calendar, that makes sense from a flow perspective, and we can get the athletes there and build on something that can be special, versus just stuffing something in the calendar that has other negative flow-on effects.
I always wondered this, but more so now than ever, at this cultural moment we're having, what challenges do you confront as a male executive overseeing a female league?
I haven't found any challenges personally with it. I think that there's always a perception, obviously, of am I in touch with the female position on these issues. But I think that maybe the reason that I haven't felt that is that my perception has always been about what is right and what is fair. And I think that is the basis for what a lot of these issues are stemming from. And I've always felt strongly about that. I will continue to. I've never understood the issues of partisanship or other elements like that provided preference to anybody, anywhere. So I think this has been very common and has been consistent with our approach. The WTA has always been about inclusion, support for people's preference, and providing all people opportunity and equal. And I think that's what I stand for. I think it's what the tour stands for. And I really, really haven't found any issues that have put me in a position where I felt polarized or in an uncomfortable position today.
You've been in the sport a long time, and you've been involved in women's game a long time. But since you accepted this position 3 years ago, I think almost 3 years ago to the day, I think, but last 3 years since you've been CEO, what's the biggest thing you've learned about the women's game that you may not have known or appreciated before?
I think what, as I've been in, as I've gotten in and been able to obviously get to know the athletes at a level that obviously I didn't have as just a board member and or a tournament director in my prior life. The quality of individual that we have amongst these athletes. These are really some special women. They're very, very bright. They're great athletes. They really care, and they want to understand the business. They want to understand how to grow it. They're willing to make decisions that aren't even in their best interest, but more in the interest of the business. And it's been very, very interesting to see this, and in some ways, very rewarding to see this. So I think the biggest thing has just been the pride and the quality of these young women, and it's been really fun to see.
Here's the last one for me. If Serena breaking Margaret Court's record, controversy-free finals, title sponsor, full health for all players. What's your sort of number one on your wish list for 2019?
I'm greedy. All the above.
I don't know. I mean, what do you think, seriously, though? When you project for next year, what would you like to see happen for the WTA Tour?
Well, I would like to see us continue on our path and be building upon the pieces that we put into place this year. Obviously, we want to see in the U.S. market this Tennis Channel agreement grow. Obviously, Serena's striving for 25 will continue to be a story, as well as some of these great young players that are coming up. Will the Ariana Sabalenka's be able to take that next step? Will Naomi continue her run? I think these are all compelling stories that when you tie them together with what Serena's trying to accomplish, I think creates great dynamics. And then, of course, if we're able to secure some more sponsorship that comes from the success of these, that will continue to help drive the business. So I've never been one that's shy to have multiple goals and multiple things that I'm shooting at, and 2019 won't be any different there.
I think you should also strive to have double the prize money at your year-end event. You've already done that. It's one off the bucket list.
We did accomplish that one starting in 2019. So anyway,
great. I said recently, I said this was a sort of sneaky strong year for women's tennis, and I stand by that. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
No worries. It was a pleasure, and thank you very much for your continued support. That's great.
Pleasure. We'll do it again soon. Good luck. Congrats, and thanks again. All right. Thanks to Steve for spending half an hour with us. Good talking and catching up with him. Thank you, Jamie Lasanti, producer extraordinaire. I'll bring you in now. You sat in on that. Top line thoughts?
You didn't ask about the website.
Ah, you're right. We had limited time. Why is it that we can't figure out who it was that Naomi Osaka lost to earlier this year because the website doesn't have that level of functionality? Is that what you're asking?
Something like that. No, he was good. He, he answers your questions as expected. I think as, someone in his position, but, it's good to have him on. I think it's great that he's so accessible. I think it's funny. You think about,
we did not have to jump through great hoops to secure this interview.
Exactly.
Correct?
I mean, he is, I think it would take a lot longer to go talk to
Roger Goodell. For
exactly.
Example.
Or, it's interesting when you think about that, but I think he's very gracious at this time. And I think he, as you said, I can't believe it's been 3 years already.
That's right. No, I mean, I think that it's a tough position. And he has a lot of different constituents. It's not as linear as, hey, there are a bunch of franchise owners who have named me commissioner and the players have their own union that I'll have to negotiate with. I mean, this is a really, really tricky job. And I think you could tell from his responses, this is not someone who speaks rashly or acts rashly. He's a fairly measured presence. He's not in the business of denigrating his product, nor should he be. I think realistically, you could push him on things like the Be In Sports deal. Mm-hmm. He spoke very charitably of that. Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of American tennis fans that probably would be a little bit, perhaps a little bit harsher. But I think that given all of the constituents that he needs to keep happy, all the pressures, again, it's a revenue position at some level. It's a keep the players happy level. There are agents involved. I mean, there's a lot of dynamics here. And I think this goes to the screwed up nature of tennis. I don't think this is the business model anyone would have wanted if you were starting the sport tomorrow, but at some level you play the hand you're dealt, and I think he plays it quite well. I think we could pick apart a few decisions. I thought his remarks immediately after that US Open final were ill-considered, but I think you can tell from talking to him, he cares deeply, he's circumspect, he's cautious in what he says, and I think that's necessarily so. So I'm glad, happy for the time, and happy he had some interesting thoughts on the state of the women's tennis.
He also has been, I mean, women's tennis the past 3 years, I think arguably has been the best, maybe not ever, but it has been at a high level. I mean, the men's game has most recently sort of started to come back, but I mean, we always talk about, we recap majors and we come back and we say, the women's tournament was really freaking exciting, you know what I mean? And in comparison.
I think we're at like four or five slams in a row where that's been the case,
exactly.
Too.
And
it's
so
great that Roger and Rafa win, but yeah.
Right, and so we've had a lot of different storylines with Serena kind of being a thread throughout the whole time, which obviously, as he said, she's great for the sport, and I'm sure he's very thankful to have someone equivalent to a Federer or Nadal, in the women's game. But there are so many other people, so many other younger women that have just come up and really are making the game that much better. And then it's competitive, it's high quality. I mean, almost every major, I think the match of the tournament has been a women's match, if not tied for first in the last couple.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that if you look at the product out there, I think you're right. I mean, it's as strong as it's been. You had this period in the late 90s where you had the Williams sisters and Hingis and Kournikova and Monica Seles and Lindsay, and it was just, it was from the quarterfinals on, no matter how the plot broke, it was going to be relevant. That's 20 years ago already. And women's tennis, I think, has been a little bit overshadowed by Federer, Nadal, Djokovic. Serena Williams is obviously a consistent winner, but we've seen periods of absences from Serena, of course. It's, we're going on 2 years since she last won a major. I think, again, it's been in a sneaky kind of way. Naomi Osaka was most recent. You sort of look at the last six or seven major champions. They've all been different players. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. A lot of the most competitive matches, you know, Lauren Davis, Halep.
Right.
They haven't even been, I mean, I'm not even talking about finals. We've had some very nice women's finals as well. The Serena-Osaka controversy was a big talking point. But the flip side is that a 20-year-old Japanese player is a Grand Slam champion and the hottest thing in the sport right now. So interesting times for the women's tour. I mean, I'd like to see this translate a little bit more on a balance sheet. I think that, yeah, things are probably That's trending fair. In the right direction. You know, Naomi Osaka was a big winner after the U.S. Open. I'm not sure the WTA necessarily fared as well as the player individually. That's always been the case, of course. I mean, the Williams sisters, Kournikova, I mean, Anna Kournikova at one point had allegedly more in gross revenues than the entire WTA tour. So I think sponsors a lot of times are banking on a player and not necessarily an institution, which is always going to be a problem
funny.
In individual sports. Yeah, go ahead.
You say it and he says it, the product. Or, you know, even the name WTA itself, it's a tour, right? And so I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting thing. I mean, it's not the National Basketball Tour or the National Football Tour. You know, I always thought that was an interesting way of, you know, presenting it. And when you guys talk about it as a product, it just kind of reminds you that, oh, yeah, you know, this is a business, especially for someone like Steve in his position.
Yeah, no, and it's a weird business too, right? Because at some level, these individual tournaments are their own businesses, right? Indian Wells wants its own sponsor, and here comes BNP Paribas, and that's great. I'm not sure Indian Wells is necessarily that invested in how the other events fare. The
right.
players are individual brands and businesses. Maria Sharapova and Osaka sort of go to Serena Williams. They all want their own deals and have their own deals, as they should. But does that come at the expense of the WTA as this entity, as this circuit? You know, Steve Simon's predecessor was supposed to sell, and she didn't sell particularly well. And that, I think, you know, candidly probably cost her the CEO position. You see signs of increased revenues on the women's side. Certainly, I mean, again, he sort of, I thought, I'd say kindly, deflected the question. But no question the money's coming out of Asia. I mean, this year-end championship in Shenzhen, where they're going to offer the winner more money than any major is. The money's clearly in Asia, and I think it becomes a question of how much do you go chasing the dollar when, as he said, the American market is very important. The top
right.
players come from Europe. There are no majors in Asia. How much does it benefit the tour to sort of transplant itself to the Far East? Certainly it helps short-term financially, but is that in the best interest of the sport? It's a lot. It's a tricky balance, and I think you're right. It's not like the NBA, and it's not like the New York Knicks. And you don't have the NBA is strengthened when certain teams do well and when the overall, again, I'll use the word product, is strong. Tennis is a little bit different, where you have this chain of tournaments throughout the year that at some level are interdependent, but they're really their own
right,
separate entities.
The Indian Wells caliber of tournaments, like as you said, I mean, Indian Wells, the fifth major, you know, quote unquote, they want to be their own big.
Yeah, exactly.
Big thing.
I mean, it's almost they are pitted against other tournaments
right.
in a way that
you know,
the Knicks and the Nets necessarily aren't.
What better smoothies and you know, car services can we keep supplying so that the players keep saying this is the best tournament ever?
I suspect a lot of tournaments wish they had the P&L pressures or lack thereof that Indian Wells has. But, you know, Indian Wells is a very different business model than Cincinnati, which is a very different business model for Madrid. And I think all of this goes to your question, which I think is really a good one, which is at the end of the day, what is the WTA Tour?
Mm-hmm.
It's an individual sport. The players are individual brands. The tournaments are individual events. Yes, you can sell TV as a package, but even that becomes problematic. And the majors aren't part of this deal. So at the end of the day, I mean, I think the very first question that Steve Simon probably asked himself is, what is this product that I speak of? At the end of the day, what is it? What are my assets? What am I selling in this global marketplace? We didn't even talk about that, which is when the PGA Tour, when golf threads its way mostly through one country, that's a lot easier a sale. It's very hard to find a title sponsor for the WTA Tour when it is as global as it is. There are sort of the global economy takes and it gives. And sometimes if the tour, I think we're more geographically restricted. We've talked sometimes about regional tours in tennis. Maybe
mm-hmm.
that's an easier sell, but he's got to sell a product that resonates in Singapore, but also resonates in Madrid and Cincinnati. So it's a tough job. And I would argue that on balance, he's acquitting himself quite well.
For sure. And we're happy to have him on.
Happy to have him on. Okay. We are going to have another guest coming up soon, but that will do it for this week as the tennis season winds down. Jamie, thank you. If people were interested in subscribing or leaving reviews, where might they go?
They can go on Apple Podcasts and click subscribe and leave us a nice little review. I had someone the other day, I read something where somebody said that when talking about certain events that happen in the sport, we should not always assume that people listening know every detail of how the event transpired. So I think it was a good point. Sometimes I think we jump into conversations, especially with guests, and we talk about things that happened in previous tournaments or, you know, drama that's happening. And we're assuming that all the listeners know, but we should probably give some background information here and there, or even if it's something that you and I are talking about. So that was a good,
that's helpful feedback. Advice. That's
yes.
Good. One thing I got was that sometimes we assume our audience is perhaps more American than it is. And things like Leslie Jones spoofing Serena on Weekend Update requires a beat. So let us say, Leslie Jones, American comedian, Saturday Night Live, popular weekly show. She spoofed Serena Williams doing a recent newscast. And I think YouTube's probably your friend there. I didn't think it was particularly funny. But having said that,
good feedback.
Good feedback. And feel free to YouTube Leslie Jones mocking Serena. Okay, that that does it for this week. We are very much open to constructive criticism, aren't we, Jamie?
Definitely.
So keep the comments coming. All right, we'll do it again in a week. Thanks to WTA CEO Steve Simon. Thanks, Jamie. And talk soon. Take care.